Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to episode 46 of Maison Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Maison Avenue. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and back in black this week is Rob Castellano. Rob, how's it going?
Not too bad. You just reminded me of a pretty interesting album. I'll take that.
Yeah, it's definitely apparently in the era in which you actually listen to music. So,
exactly. Just be happy that it's not current day pop or something like that.
Yeah. We're going to tap dance a little bit because there's not much to talk about. We held off recording until Tuesday night, hoping something would come down from the winter meetings. And nothing really has. Big news of the day was a three-team trade centered around Mark Trumbo. So, yeah, I mean, one of those news weeks, I guess.
Yeah, not too much Mets-related. I mean, we can discuss that trade. We can continue to discuss Curtis Granderson, I suppose.
First, we have to name the episode, and it's not a great crop of number 46s either, Rob.
No, it's not. There's sort of like the elephant in the room that I don't want to really say, but I think we sort of have to, right?
Well, I mean, I was tempted to go with the Acostalypse because it's a sonorous episode title. There's also a couple busted prospects in Jeremy Griffiths and David West. Craig Swan wore it in his first call-up, but not really going to make it. Ralph Terry wore it in 1966 when the Mets were still in their fine old New York players phase. But in the end, Rob, it's Oliver Perez.
Yeah, I think it is. I hate to say it.
I mean, he wore it for the longest and had the best Mets career of anyone that wore 46.
Yeah, believe it or not, he wore it best, most infamously and best, most productively.
So this will be the 3 years for $39 million episode, I guess. It might actually be the worst. I was looking. It might actually be the worst crop of players for any number that we've done so far. 40s, probably in the same conversation. But I have soft spots for numerous number 40s. Brian Bannister, Jay Wong So, Jeff Innes. I feel like Pat Zachary was decent. So I think it's like Pat Zachary was probably better than Oliver Perez, and their down ballot guys were certainly better.
It's like just no. That quickly? Was it 3 for 39? I thought it was 3 for 36, but I may have already forgotten.
You might be right. For some reason, I have 3 for... I've blocked out much of the Oliver Perez tenure, but for some reason, I have 3 for 39 in my head.
Yeah, well, justifiable. I mean, the less we talk about him, the better. It's just... It's already
I feel like it's a meme, though, so I should not be wrong about this, but I might be wrong about this. So we're going to check Baseball Reference. Live Googling on the podcast. Not a surprise. He's actually fifth in WAR for pitchers in 2004.
That was a big year for him. 2004, back with the Pirates, he was, and he killed it on my fantasy team. Let's just say that.
3 for 36. You were correct.
Sadly, those numbers have been burned into my brain. I'll never be able to forget that.
Better you than me. Yeah. All right. So the agenda for the podcast: we'll gloss over the minor news stories of the week at the beginning, as we've been doing the last couple episodes. After that, talk about the Curtis Granderson deal. Chris and I talked a little bit about it in episode 45. It wasn't finalized yet at the point. It was finalized a full 12 hours after we finished recording the podcast, so not 5 minutes afterwards. But by the time you heard the podcast, certainly it was slightly out of date, and probably whatever, I'm sure there'll be breaking news that will break during this or directly after this podcast, because that's the way it's been going.
Yeah, I just assume that the podcast is pretty much always out of date as soon as we wrap it.
Yes. After that, we'll talk about the Rule 5 draft, because there's literally nothing else to talk about this week. I didn't want to talk about the Rule 5 draft, but we're going to talk about the Rule 5 draft. It's Thursday morning. We'll come up with something. And then we have your emails. We have a few emails this week, so that'll probably make up the bulk of the podcast. So the news of the week, Rob, or the news of the last 5 days or so. We have the aforementioned ridiculous multi-team trade with Mark Trumbo. We have Justin Turner being non-tendered for lack of Grisian. We want to talk briefly about that. I really have no strong feelings. The The lack of hustle thing's kind of weird. I mean, I saw him on a rehab assignment and he wasn't running out anything, but it's a rehab assignment. I don't expect dudes to run out ground balls on rehab assignments.
Yeah, I guess it just, more than anything, it speaks to the interesting sort of divide between the fans' perception of players and what may actually be happening. Because I think if you asked Mets fans, myself included, we probably would have put Turner at the top of the, like, all hustle list.
Well, you'd assume a dude with his tools would have to, like, grind it out to really make it in the first place.
Yeah, but I guess there are those sort of, like, red herrings that sort of throw us off the scent, one of which being pies. That just sort of, you just
pies
assume
equal hustle.
Pie that's just a hustler.
Well, I mean, maybe they just confuse him not hustling with him being slow.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. It's just, it's like a weird thing, because Ruben was the only one that had it, though I guess I saw somebody, Jorge Castillo, I think, came out and confirmed it with either the same source or somebody else. But it just seems like a weird thing to be like, Adam Ruben making it sound like he was like trying to drag out this story about what happened, but then like, why did they not tender him? I don't understand. Like, really trying to get to the bottom of this, you know, international mystery.
You don't really imagine that there are many people asking that question anymore. I think that the time has sort of passed. We've digested that news and it sort of had died. And you're right, it sort of bounced back, and
but,
it's sort of a surprising little
props to Ruben. He chased that dog down and got us the inside dirt on the non-tendering of Justin Turner. Very important. I mean, yeah, it's kind of shitty to leak that out on the way out the door for a guy looking for a job.
You know,
who knows who the actual source even was, but was someone inside the organization? I assume it was, but who knows how high up or, you know, how much weight that person's opinion was given in the room. I don't know, but
you know what they should do is utilize the pitch effects cameras that are installed in the stadium to see which beat writers are meeting up with team personnel, like the Knicks are doing right now.
Oh, really? I didn't know that was a thing. I don't really follow basketball. It doesn't surprise me from what little I know about the Knicks. So
it's so inane, but that it could only take place in the Knicks universe of just wacky stories that's happening for them right now.
Other news of the week, Rob. The Mets are interested in baseball players to play baseball for their baseball team.
That indeed they are.
So a few of the names have been tossed around over the last 36 hours from our 10,000 Chris McShanes typing on 10,000 typewriters. Mitchell Boggs, former St. Louis Cardinals setup man.
Pass.
Dustin Ackley, who is actually, as far as I can tell, he has like the terrible Justin Turner beard, so he's almost like Justin Turner, but he got $7 million.
That's a hard pass for me.
I appear to be lower on Dustin Ackley than the rest of Mets Twitter. I kind of said the same thing, and people seem to be more encouraged by his second half than I am. I mean, I guess, whatever. It's maybe there's something still there. He's still 25. It depends on what you're going to have to give up. I'd rather go full bore after Nick Franklin if you're going to trade with the Mariners, but Mets probably don't want to part with enough to get Franklin into St. Lucie for March, so whatever. Dustin Ackley, I don't even know. Cesaris Torres certainly is on the list. Hard after Cesaris Torres. And they may or may not have renewed interest in Bronson Arroyo.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I continue to sort of waffle whether or not I like the idea of bringing in Arroyo. At first, I was not a fan, but...
And we haven't really talked about Arroyo, because I think the last time he was on the agenda for Tuesday, and then the same kind of thing happened, where it's like, the Mets are interested, and the Mets are no longer interested.
Yeah. But feel like it's sort of that waiting game to see who's going to be left without a chair and who they can sort of grab for cheap. I don't know that it'll necessarily be Arroyo, but...
It sounds like now he might re-sign with the Reds. I don't even know. I mean, I think I was down on him, but I may have been weighting his 2012 too heavily in my mind. He's actually been pretty consistent for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you got to like about him, is that you pretty much know what you're going to get. It's not going to be spectacular, but you know what it's going to be.
He is sort of the quintessential number four starter, which is fine, useful, even. I just don't know if you want to give the years and dollars that it's going to take to probably get him in your camp. And it's like, it's not going to happen anyway, apparently, so who knows.
I was sort of glad to hear that Sandy came out. He made a couple comments, one of which was not a big surprise that he was hesitant to give multiple years to any pitcher, which sort of makes it difficult to imagine bringing in Arroyo. But
Or
two,
signing any pitcher, really.
to bring in anyone of note. But the second comment was that he was hesitant to do so because he didn't want to block his upcoming prospects, and sort of piggyback on that statement by saying that he fully intends to see Henry Mejia vie for a rotation spot in spring training. So if there was any question mark about that, it has been removed. He will be in the rotation, or at least will be given that opportunity.
As well, he should.
Agreed.
And just breaking the last few hours or so, the Mets have, in fact, re-signed Jeremy Hefner to a minor league deal.
I
So,
didn't know that. You just broke
yes.
the news to me.
Oh, there you go. It's news to you. So, yeah, that's great. I kind of suspected that would happen. I didn't see anyone else really giving him a major league deal and having to add him to the 40s. So, comes back to the Mets. I don't know if he has enough service time to qualify for sort of the minimum pay cut, so he probably makes more than your average, non-roster guy, but good for him. He gets to stay with the club, gets to rehab, sort of maybe that's more in his comfort zone, I don't know, but it's great. Good for Jeremy Hefner. And good for the Mets, because they probably will get first crack at him. I mean, he'll probably maybe start getting into rehab games late summer, so they'll get a look at him, maybe first crack to bring him back, so I'm fine with that.
Now, the one downside is that didn't he make some sort of like cryptic statement after they non-tendered him about like he had some sort of thoughts about the situation and said that he couldn't really say anything more than that until he found a new team or he until he moved on?
I didn't see that. That's possible, I suppose.
I think I remember reading that over on Mets blog, so I
Well,
guess
that's
take
what you
that.
get for reading Matt's blog.
Yeah. Large grain of salt with that one, but I guess we'll never know what the quote unquote situation was with Jeremy Hefner.
Oh, he doesn't tweet that much, let me see. No, I don't see any tweets.
No, you know what? Here it is. It's a quote. It was apparently a short interview with the Bergen Record,
Okay.
where he politely declined to discuss the situation with the Mets and their roster decision. You know, to me, that just sounds like he was being a polite guy because he's ultra polite
He is ultra polite,
when you
yes.
talk to him.
So.
And it's sort of a beat writer spinning that to be, well, what could it
Some sort
be?
of secret. Yeah, no, that's fine, whatever.
But we can just use our imaginations and pretend there's some sort of like crazy controversy going on that we'll never know about.
LOL Mets, in
Exactly.
short. And the last bit of news for the week, Rob, my phone is now autofilling Arwe Baruena. I'll have to
Wow.
just type in ARR and it autofills.
On the bright side, I'm sure that saves you a lot
It
of
saves me
time.
so much time. You have no idea. This is like one of the better things to happen to me recently, in the last few hours at least.
And now that I'm thinking, but what else would it think to like arboretum maybe?
That's my one
What's
R. It takes 2 R's to do it. I have to put the full 2 R's in. Arroz con pollo. I do like arroz con pollo, but I don't think I tweet about it that much.
I'm guessing that's some sort of like Latin dish.
Yes, rice with chicken. That's what I get for 6 years of Spanish.
And it does sound like the Mets have at least slight interest. It sounds like they're going to send some scouts out to
Yeah, it
check
does.
him
I
out.
mean, they're scouting, and they seem to be one of the teams that are interested, and they have a need. You'd probably have to start in double or triple A, I would guess. But you know what? Get Barbaro. Get him in the barn. Seriously, Barbaro, Irisbel, Arwe Baroena. Make it happen.
And for anyone that missed it the last time we discussed him, basically it'd be reliving the Rhea Ordóñez experience.
Yeah, basically. Somewhere in between Adani Echevarria, Rhea Ordóñez, and Jose Iglesias. You want to cover all the glove-first Cuban shortstops.
And at this point, I'd take it.
Yeah. And then hopefully he will someday be worthy of a Canadian punk song like Rhea Ordóñez was.
I missed that one.
Oh, I come on, I tweet it out all the time. I probably tweeted that YouTube video like at least once a month at this point. The Ballad of Rhea Ordóñez by the Isotopes. You can look it up.
You know
It
what I
did come
would?
out after 1977, though, so I know it's not in your milieu.
Yeah, true. And you know what? I think I thought it was like a highlight reel of just his best plays,
It does
which.
have Ray Ordonez highlights in it, probably violating some sort of MLB copyright, but they're Canadian, so I'm sure it doesn't count there.
And shame on me for not clicking on it anyway. I should have even knowing it was a highlight reel, I should have clicked on it.
Yes, absolutely. Ray Ordonez, man. I have a dream that I will. I see, I don't think I ever gave away my Ray Ordonez jersey. I'm sure it's probably somewhere in my parents' house somewhere. I dream that someday I will find it. I think it's a youth extra large, too, so it probably still fits me.
I keep hoping I'll find my old Alfonso shirt jersey, and I think it's gone.
I've just been too lazy to make a new one. Because I don't think they let you make black ones anymore. And it kind of have to be, I guess.
This
And
is true.
let's be honest, Chris. If I'm going, or wow, that's amazing. I always call Chris Rob. I just call you Chris. That never happens.
Ooh, when you snuck it by me, I didn't even notice until you said that. You could have gotten away with it.
Weird Twilight Zone. If I'm making a jersey of anyone wearing number 13 for the Mets, let's, you know, it's gonna be Josh Satin.
Yeah. I noticed that Curtis Granderson had his whole press conference earlier today and announced that he was going to be wearing number three.
Yeah, number
And
three.
I guess I sort of forgot that Satin wore number three.
He did briefly, but who had it last year? Somebody had it when he was called up. I can't remember. Was it Marlon Byrd was wearing three?
No, I don't
I
think.
still have this open. I should be able to check all the uniform numbers open. It was Omar Quintanilla had it when he was
Okay.
called up. Cause he wore it, and yeah, he wore it his first two call-ups, then switched to 13. Which I'm okay with. I feel like he's the heir apparent to Edgardo Alfonso anyway, so. And
True.
really, you know, it's not gonna get retired, but you look at the people that have worn it. I mean, Billy Wagner, fine, but hasn't exactly been a who's who of Mets superstars since Alfonso. And really since before Alfonso, nobody. I mean, Mazzilli in his second, you know, sort of his pinch hitter extraordinaire role wore 13, but I'm just saying, if I were going to make a jersey for number 13, it would probably be Josh Sen. Since all I have to do is click on the drop-down. You started talking about Curtis Granderson, so let's move into Curtis Granderson. That's the news, I guess. About 12 hours after we wrapped episode 45, it was made official the Mets signed Curtis Granderson for 4 years and $60 million. I believe it's, what, 13, 16, 16, 15 for those of you accountants at home. I think we saw it coming at the time. I think I said I was hoping it wouldn't be 4 years, but it was 4 years, the only one that went there. That's sort of the winner's curse kind of thing you expect in free agency. And with the price of the win going up to, you know, 7 million, if you want to go beyond the box scores number, and Fangraphs sort of already upped this offseason's number to 6.5 million per win. Seems like a reasonable contract for Granderson, all in all. Chris thought it would be okay. I know you're not quite as high on Granderson as we are, so do you want to make a case that it's a bad deal, or are you copacetic?
I mean, I guess this would be similar to my reaction on Chris Young, that it's not necessarily a bad deal, and it's probably the best of what's out there. So really, it's just sort of complaining to complain. Again, I need to sort of remember we're not going to be
Nelson
acquiring Clayton
Cruz
Stein.
turned down 5 years and $75 million, reportedly.
Yeah, which would make this deal a lot more attractive. And that sort of makes me feel like Nelson Cruz just being a dummy, because I just don't imagine him getting more money than that. But hey, he must know what he's doing,
Seems
so
like
in that
Seattle
case.
keeps is it was reportedly from Seattle, and they seem to be keep willing to outbid themselves, so I guess wait a couple more months, maybe it's 585.
Yeah, maybe a sixth year.
Who knows? A lot of things can happen.
Yeah, I mean, if that is true, then obviously the Granderson deal is a lot more palatable. I mean, I didn't like the fourth year either, and that's sort of my thinking, that I hate giving a 4-year deal to a guy who won't step on the field for the team before his age 33 season. So, I mean,
It technically is age 3. He's like right on the cutoff, isn't he? For like,
yeah, he is.
so whatever, 33, 34, 33 and a half. But yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that in itself sort of scares me. There's this the discussion of, you know, we've hit on it a number of times this offseason. the idea of grabbing the bounce back guys, a la the Red Sox this season, is, a pretty good candidate to sort of fit into that mold. But, it's very similar to with Chris Young. It's not as if he had been on top of the world and, just random bad year. It's been a couple of bad years now. And last year, obviously more injuries than anything else. That being said, the key skills are still there. The power is still there. Even, when he was on the field last year, he was hitting for power, and that's sort of what they're signing him up to bring is, that additional power hitter to protect David Wright, which is what it sounds like he's going to be doing in the cleanup role.
I'm not thrilled with him batting cleanup, but I can't really see. They're not going to bat right cleanup, which is fine, I guess. You'd hope that they had sort of that middle of the order first base bat, which they don't, so you could bat Granderson second, but or right second and Granderson third, which they probably wouldn't do. But you're right, I mean, he's a three true outcomes guy. He's going to strike out a lot. He's going to walk a lot. He's going to hit his fair share of dingers. I think, as I said, with Chris last week, I think he'll be fine. He's not going to hit 42 home runs in Citi Field, but it's not that bad a left-handed hitter's park if you can yank it down the line, which is where his power is anyway.
Yeah, you'd hope that he grabs a couple of those freebie Chase Utley style home runs just by moving to City.
No, I think it'll be good. It'll be a good defensive outfield with him. And for some reason, it sounds like there's scuttlebutt that they're really going to play Young in center and Eric Young Jr. in left. I don't think you can do that. He's
At
just
the
not, it's
depth
like
of Lagares on the bench?
bench or triple A.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either, because assuming he's healthy and the knee thing is fine, which it sounds like it will be, Eric Young's just not a better hitter than Lagares, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah,
I
and
mean,
for
he's
anyone who can.
faster. He's fast. Eric Young Jr. is fast. He's
Yeah.
useful. He's a major league player. Should not be starting every day in a corner.
No. And I mean, if you didn't hear, Juan Lagares was shut down in winter ball for sort of a minor knee injury, which they flew him up to New York, and it sounds like it's nothing. They're just going to let him rest and he'll be back to 100%. But yeah, beyond that, I don't really understand the thing. That just sounds like a random winter rumor that has no base to me.
I mean, if you have a plus 10 center fielder, you play him every day. I'm sorry. Because he just doesn't have to hit that much anymore. And there's still some upside with Lagares. Eric Young Jr., we know what he is. He's
Yeah.
a useful fourth outfielder, super sub, pinch runner. It gives you some flexibility on the bench. Don't get me wrong, it sounds like if you listen to this podcast the last few weeks that this should really be like anti-Eric Young Jr. Avenue audio. I like Eric Young Jr. as a player. I think he's useful. He's just not a major league starter, and that's fine. But all we hear is, oh, and he'll be starting in second base if they trade Murphy. He'll be starting in left field. It's like, nah, don't do that. That's not a good idea.
Yeah,
Please.
I guess what I'll say, and this sort of relates to the Granderson in a cleanup hole and Young and left, they still don't have a stable enough roster where we're going to see the same lineup day in, day out, the same, batting order day in, day out.
No, I
It's
mean
going to continue to
they're
be.
still gonna be platooning, I think, at least at first, certainly, maybe at shortstop, depending on whatever they end up doing at shortstop. So I think, yeah, you're right. And what they get back for Davis, I mean, they trade Davis this week, which is probably the most likely thing to happen. I don't think it'll be a particularly active winter meetings because it looks like Granderson was the big offseason signing. That's not super encouraging.
Yeah, well, like you said, at least it's not Nelson Cruz, and at the very least, we can say that the outfield situation has improved. But it will be interesting to see for a team that set the franchise record in strikeouts last year, how many more they can add just in the addition of Granderson and Chris Young alone.
It's going to be a lot. I mean, when you
Yeah.
think about it, there's really no. I mean, Daniel Murphy is probably, if I had to guess, of the roster as it's currently comprised, Daniel Murphy and assuming Tejada's at shortstop, those are the only two guys on in the lineup that are going to give you a below league average K rate. Wright's brought his down, but it's still average-ish. Granderson's going to strike out a lot. Chris Young's going to strike out a lot. Lagares, I mean, you hope he brings it down a little bit, but he's still probably going to be above average K guy, around 20%. The first base platoon will strike out a lot, whether it's Duda or Davis. And even against lefties, Satin's still gonna have an above average K rate, probably. Darno, he still feels like a guy to me that's gonna strike out a decent amount. So yeah, they're gonna strike out a lot. It's gonna be a lot of strikeouts, walks, and hopefully more home runs.
Yeah.
And
Oh,
Daniel
get
Murphy doing Daniel Murphy things.
ready to love the strikeout this year. I think that'll definitely be a mainstay of the summer. And just sort of looking at Mets 2013 stats by batting order position, the scary thing is that Curtis Granderson could conceivably fit in the leadoff or second hole too, just in terms of what we have currently versus what he could bring. Obviously, you don't want to put him there, but he would immediately become the best leadoff option as well, just based
You
on the
know, if
fact
you
that.
seriously, if you had a middle of the order bat at first base or right field that you could plop into the four hole, I think Granderson could absolutely hit first or second on this team.
Yeah, I mean, first you'd hate to waste the power because that's, the one skill that is going to be there. But,
I think there's also a decent enough chance the batting average is low enough that the OBP is still not great.
yeah, I
So
agree.
you
And
ideally you'd have a high OBP guy. I kind of wish they had gone out and gotten Aoki, given what he ended up getting traded for, instead of signing Young, and I'm fine with the Young deal. But you put Aoki first, Granderson second. Yeah, you put two lefties there. It's not ideal, but
righties start 70% of the games anyway,
yeah.
so.
So Aoki gets on base, and Granderson has enough pop to drive him in. And then behind him, you have a right and somebody, probably Duda or Davis. Batting fourth, and that's not great, but I think
You have to hope
it
that.
clusters a little bit better, I guess, which is what it's going to come down to. And then you can bat Murphy fifth, which I think is more ideal.
Yeah, I think you just have to hope that whatever happens at leadoff, you don't have another 293 on base percentage. And I don't know how it's going to occur because it sort of looks like all the same pieces,
Somehow
but
Eric Young Jr. is going to be leading off on opening day. I've accepted my lot in life here.
yeah, I think there's a very good chance we're going to see him leading off quite a bit until they come up with a better option,
I mean,
which
I tweeted this out. They really should have the Satin Duda platoon leading off, but they'll never do it.
Nah, conventional baseball wisdom is still too strong in that regard
I
that
still
they
think Satin should bat lead off against lefties at least, though. I understand batting Duda in the middle of the order to kind of stretch it a little bit, or Davis to stretch it a little bit. It's not going to be Davis. Let's not kid ourselves. But I understand batting Duda fourth or fifth to stretch the middle of the order a little bit, but against lefties, if you're committed to the Satin platoon, he'll give you 350, 360 on base percentage against lefties, which I think is probably your best option.
Yeah, and it's not like he's hitting for a ton of power that you're losing out on that.
Right. If he can give you, 270, 350, 400 against left-handed pitching, that's reasonable. I mean, he'll see enough righties that his line will probably be closer to his current Steamer and Oliver projections, but if you're leveraging him against lefties, yeah, bat him lead off. Why not? I mean, what do you have to lose at this point?
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think it's completely out of the realm. I think there's some day
I
in
mean,
like
batting the
June,
other option, I
July.
guess, would be batting Darno lead off for number two. I just don't think we know enough what the shape of his performance is going to look like at the major league level, I guess. So he'll end up batting sixth or seventh, probably.
Yeah, and he definitely looked like a guy who is going to need a little bit of adjustment, just at least in terms of his approach. When we first saw him last year, he had that big swing and he was pulling off on pretty much everything, swinging and missing quite a bit. You hope that he sort of brings it down a little bit. Doesn't necessarily have to swing for the fences like it looks like he was, but you're right, it's hard to really say what he's going to be, so you don't really necessarily want to count on him all that much.
And I feel like we're getting into our 2014 roster preview. So let's move on. Let's not scoop ourselves and move on to the Rule 5 draft is Thursday, Rob.
Whoopee.
So here's what I'm going to say about this. Listeners, you don't have to care about the Rule 5 draft. I promise you. I said on Twitter nobody should care about the Rule 5 draft, and I got taken to task. I'm not going to say you shouldn't care about the Rule 5 draft. But you don't have to care about the Rule 5 draft. I do. Rob does. And if we've done nothing in the last almost 50 episodes of this show, We should have demonstrated that you shouldn't have to be like us. You have options. Run away while you can. So that's my introduction to our Rule 5 draft preview. Let's talk about the Rule 5 draft, Rob.
Well, let's discuss the fool's gold at the end of the tunnel here. The reason why baseball degenerates like us waste way too much of our
Well,
lives.
we love fringy prospects for one.
Exactly. And then there are those success stories, the guys that, against all odds, not only became everyday players, but there's some pretty good names here.
You know, the amusing thing about all this is the Mets have actually drafted really well in the Rule 5 draft the last few years. They just haven't reaped any benefits from it.
Exactly. There are those guys to be had, and we had them. We
I mean,
had them.
Darren O'Day
Best
has turned into
example.
a very good major league reliever.
Exactly. Darren O'Day was one that
You know,
stuck
Beato's
in my
kind of an
car.
up and down guy, but you know, somebody that probably shouldn't have been traded for Kelly Schapich. And even Kyle Lobstein, who's been like a beat writer in joke for the last years, since the Mets picked him and traded him to Detroit, he's like, you know, like a potential lefty back end starter for Detroit this year.
Yeah, now that one, I think they tried to send him back and then bought his rights when.
They basically worked something out with Tampa, I
Yeah,
think,
okay.
to.
Because I was gonna say, I don't think he got a start with the Tigers, but he looked pretty good in AAA.
Yeah, they worked out an actual trade where they didn't have to keep him on the 25 man, and they tried to make him a starter, and he pitched okay. Like, he's not going to be anything special, but he'd be, and Brad Ehmus is, you know, whatever. But.
Yeah, see, that's one of the swings and misses.
They can't all be Johan Santana and Dan Uggla. In fact, most of them aren't.
Don't forget Josh Hamilton, Shane Victorino, Joaquin Soria.
Sure. But here's the thing, like, a lot. They have, like, there'll be 20 Rule 5 picks this year, maybe, in an average year, and that's kind of like every year, and you just named like five dudes.
Yeah, like I said, this is most certainly fool's gold. My rule is sort of like each year there's going to be one guy who might just be like an interesting name by the end of the year. It won't necessarily be Josh Hamilton, Johan Santana, but he'll be like, huh, he was a Rule 5, huh? Maybe we should have taken a look at him. And you want to be the team that gets that guy.
I think the interesting one this year to me at least is Daniel Burawa. Burawa? I'm probably gonna pronounce this wrong, out of the Yankees organization.
Yeah, I like him too, actually.
He's the guy that sort of had his timetable accelerated because he missed a whole year. I assume for Tommy John. I haven't actually done the requisite research. But only missed 1 year, so I assume it's Tommy John. You know, he's reliever only profile, but he throws hard. You know, he can touch in the mid-90s, some sort of breaking ball and questionable control, which is the kind of guy that gets exposed in the Rule 5 draft, but the kind of guy that, you know, maybe you can do something with. And he's a local product, St. John's dude, Rocky Point's own, which I guess counts as in the general sphere of Mets influence, even though I think it's like as far east as like Old Saybrook. It's like way down on Long Island, but close enough.
I'm not familiar with Rocky Point. I
It's way out
apologize to
there.
listeners from there.
So yeah, so you know, that's the kind of guy that gets picked. Big dude, throws hard, questionable secondaries and control. But if you wanna put together a bullpen of dudes that throw hard, the Mets are, you know, it's basically sort of one more piece to go with the Familias and the Vic Blacks and the Bobby Parnells. Now he might actually not even make it to the Mets pick. It's basically draft order, so they'll have the 10th pick. He might not even make it that far. He's one of the hotter names. I kinda like Jae-Hoon Ha. So we're gonna talk a little about Jae-Hoon Ha.
Tell us about Chicken Ra.
He was a he's out of the Cubs system from Korea. He was a I don't know how they worked it out where they were able to sign him. I guess they probably asked permission because you can do that. But they signed him as like an international free agent. So he was very young when he signed. I just don't know. I like him. I just don't know if he's an upgrade over the internal options. If you assume they're going forward with young squared. Lagares and Granderson, there's gonna be a fifth outfielder there somewhere. I just don't know if he's a huge upgrade over Nieuwenhuis and Matt Dendecker. He's got that kind of profile, a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. He's right-handed, which is probably less ideal given the composition of the Mets outfield as it stands, but. You know, he can play. He's another guy that can play center field. He's a very good center fielder, actually, so it gives them a ton of flexibility to move guys around as they see fit. You know, you can give Granderson a day off every once in a while. Put a plus defender in the corner against a tough lefty. Again, I think he probably gets picked. He's seen some AAA time, so he's pretty close to major league ready. So, Jae-Hoon Ha. Yeah, that's what I got. I got Daniel Brawawa and Jae-Hoon Ha.
Yeah, I think this is probably the point that we sort of spill the beans on the fact that the only thing worse than sort of wasting your attention on the Rule 5 draft is going into some in-depth research about who your team should pick, because invariably the I mean you're going to find dozens of them out there in the next, 24 hours. The top 10 players available and like the top 15 guys, and none of them will be selected, or maybe a couple of them will be selected, but it's a couple of like completely out of nowhere names that will be that will top the lists on draft day and guys that it's like, really, him?
Again, Reiner Cruz, who I saw multiple times, went 1-1 to the Astros 2 years ago.
Exactly. And he's a perfect example of a guy that no one was talking about. After the fact, you sort of looked at him and was like, I guess he fits the profile. He throws hard as hell. He doesn't know where it's going, but,
He
you know.
still doesn't know where it's going.
Exactly. And that's sort of the point. As the first overall pick, he hasn't panned out to anything. So I've sort of let go of that capacity of following the Rule 5 draft. I don't really try to pick anyone anymore. I just sort of go with it. And the bummer is that Sandy doesn't really seem to use the Rule 5 draft as a way to bring in new talent, at least not directly.
I mean, they gave Emaus a really long look, to be
Yeah, I guess
fair.
that's one example. And they got burned, so they haven't really gone back to that well since, but that's true, they did.
I mean, I'm going to be listening to the live feed on MLB.com of this draft Thursday morning and just listening to hear the Mets say pass, probably.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's going to
Well,
happen, but don't be like us. You
yeah,
don't
we're
have to.
just
You can find another way. I guess
this
we'll
is
flip
like
this. I guess we'll flip the script. Who do you, if the Mets are going to lose somebody, who do you think it is?
two names stand out to me. One sort of more internal name is John Church.
Yeah, it's my pick too.
Yeah, he was a relief pitcher for the 51s this year in AAA, and sort of under the radar, just very solid control, solid repertoire. He's not going to be hitting 98, but he did see the velocity tick a little bit, so he can get it up into the lower 90s and maybe touch mid 90s. He's not the kind of profile that typically jumps out on draft day. So, like we said, it's
I
usually
think
the
he's got
guy.
enough velocity though. And like unlike a lot of the sort of the harder throwers, he has a serviceable breaking ball. It's
True.
nothing spectacular, but with a little tweaking you can get to major league average, which is all he really needs to fit in the back of a bullpen. So I could see somebody taking a flyer on him.
Yeah, so he put up a 3.21 ERA in 23 appearances for AAA. And in Las Vegas, 3.21 ERA is, relatively impressive. I think you hit on it. He could definitely hang in the back of a bullpen. And there are some of these guys who have more upside, but you can bring him in and they'll just blow up on you. I think Church could survive.
I mean, who's the? I don't really see somebody with more upside, at least in the Mets system. I know Baseball America listed Siciliani as one to watch. I just don't. I guess he could stick. I just wasn't super impressed with his defense either this year, so I don't know if you really keep him as a fifth outfielder. And he's not a burner per se, so.
How about Joel Corino, who they recently signed?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've seen a couple people hinted that recently. Maybe you were one of them. But you could have had him for a 40-man spot when the Mets signed him, if you really wanted him that badly, and not had to pay the Mets the extra 50 grand or whatever it is now
This is
to
true,
take a shot
no
at him.
doubt.
I mean, you would think he's pitching well in winter league ball, so maybe somebody can take a second look at him.
But
Not
yeah,
out of the
imagine he
realm
does
of,
fit the profile. He's a live arm,
yep,
he's a
not out of
good
the realm of
guy.
possibility.
Yeah, I mean there are names, but I don't necessarily fear losing any of these guys. I don't know if the Mets are going to have anyone selected.
No, I mean a couple loogies, but I just don't. Yeah, not. Not seeing it. But I will say this. I know these weren't our listeners. But really, just stop asking the Baseball America guys Rule 5 questions about Eric Campbell and Alan Dykstra. Stop doing it. I saw it this morning. I was upset. You're making us all look bad. And I like both those guys, by the way. So don't get me wrong. You know, I've spoken on the podcast at length about my enjoyment of Alan Dykstra's prodigiously long leveraged swing, and Eric Campbell's a Connecticut guy, so I gotta support my nutmeggers.
That's right.
But just don't bother JJ Cooper.
He's got bigger
He's got
things.
big, he's got a lot on his plate right now. They're rolling out their prospect list. Just you're making us look bad. All right, Rob, on to the emails. So this week I will actually remember to do the housekeeping now. This is Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of the SB Nation. New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. You can find us at amazingavenue.com. Find us on Twitter at Amazing Avenue. And because I looked this up last week, I now know it's www.facebook.com/AmazingAvenueFans is our Facebook page. As for the podcast, you can find it on iTunes. Just search for Amazing Avenue Audio and you can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. You also find us on the Stitcher app. Download us directly from AmazingAvenueAudio.com. Or listen to the embedded player that goes up in the podcast post at Amazing Avenue. My co-host this week is Rob Castellano. You can find him at underscore RobCast on the Twitter. And he, amazingly, is now on pace, I think, at all the minor league affiliate reviews done by, like, maybe April 1st. We're into full season ball now, I think. You just got Brooklyn up this morning, I saw.
Yeah, we're going to have Savannah by, let's say, actually, it's ready, but I just don't want to overload people. I want to give people time to digest.
So post-winter meetings, probably.
Yeah, let's say like Thursday or Friday, you're going to see Savannah. And then
your stocking stuffer.
Yeah, exactly. And by like maybe late July, you might see the end of this rambling series.
And I, of course, your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. Or you would know, if you do, you would know my podcast libation for this week is a homemade mulled wine, which came out okay. I think I put too much brandy in it.
Interesting. I'm sure it does the job.
It does. So now it's email time. You can email the podcast at podcast@amazingavenueaudio.com. We have a prospect-heavy vat of emails this week, which is convenient.
Huzzah.
Because if nothing else, we do like talking about our prospects.
That we do.
And somehow I've lost the email list. Ah, here it is. So our first email is from Farouk, and it's simply this. Besides Josh Satin, who are your favorite... I assume this is addressed to me, though. I emailed it to the podcast. Besides Josh Satin, who are your favorite position, player, and pitching prospects on the Mets? Favorite prospects for any reason, not prospects you think are the most talented. So I'm going to keep this in the spirit of Josh Satin and stay away from the top end guys. And I'm throwing Yanoa in that group because, A, I think he's a top 10 guy in the system. And, B, let's be honest, you all know how much I like Gabby Yanoa.
Yeah, it's old news.
It's old news. I don't need to expound on it. But I love Gabby Yanoa. So there you go. So I guess we'll start with pitchers. And I'm sticking with the horse that brought me, I guess. And I'm going to say Domingo Tapia. Domingo Tapia is my guy.
Sticking with him, huh?
I am. I'm not giving up. That fastball, Rob, that's a serious fastball. And maybe it gets better. You know, I know Phil Regan is regarded as sort of like one of the wizards in the system.
He is. He's the pitching coach in St. Lucie.
Yes. But I just, can you think of a guy that's gotten appreciably better in St. Lucie in the last few years?
Yeah, they rave about him, but you're right. I mean,
I just can't think of a guy. I mean, you've seen guys like Tank. Familia had a terrible season in St. Lucie. A lot of the top guys didn't spend a lot of time there. Harvey certainly didn't. Wheeler certainly didn't. And Wheeler had his own issues with command and holding stuff into games in St. Lucie compared to his performance in Binghamton. I just, you know, I don't have enough information here, but, you know, maybe in my heart of hearts, I think Tapia goes to, I would push Tapia to double A next year. I don't think they will. I don't know what they do with him exactly. They're going to need starters for double A.
Yeah. And it's tough because he struggled pretty heavily in St. Lucie last year.
I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. But I'm not giving up on him because he's a big dude, and god damn, that's a great fastball.
Really is. Oh, let's see. Who do I like? I mean, beyond just see, I like him because I like him. Obviously, that's going to be Zach Lutz. But
Can you
again,
do
I
a
think.
pitcher first at least and like at least stick with the format before you start raving about Zach Lutz?
Did we? Was a pitcher requested?
He's a pitching and position prospect. So
Okay.
I said we'll start with the pitchers and you go to Zach Lutz. Which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, but pick a pitcher first. I knew you were gonna pick Zach Lutz.
Of course. But yeah, I'll put him in the same bucket as Josh Sadden. That's old news, so I'll get past that.
Right, find a pitcher. Jesus.
Let's see here.
We're gonna need more mulled wine.
Let's go with the name that we've mentioned on the podcast before. So this basically I'm looking at my sleepers, I think, as I'm sort of pouring through the names in my mind. Alberto Baldonado.
Ah, I like that. Go for it.
He's a
That's it's
lefty.
going off the board.
Yeah. Now this is not a household name, but a name that we've mentioned in the space before, and he pitched last year in Kingsport, and he's the big lefty who can hit. I mean, it's as simple as that. He's a big lefty who can hit 94, 95, which at that level matters. As far as guys at the short season Kingsport Appalachian League level, that starter set gives you as good a shot as you could ask for to reach the majors or, contend at some point for a major league spot. And so for that reason, a guy who coming into the season wasn't really on many radars, and performed surprisingly well, and put himself on the radar. He'll be a name that I'll definitely be watching going into next year, especially considering, I mean, lefties didn't touch him, so obviously that's sort of the profile that you're going to groom him for.
Only you could
And
fall in love with the future loogie in the Appalachian League.
that's exactly what we're doing here. And then he's from Panama, so that's just interesting to me because nobody is from, especially not in this organization, beyond
Other than Ruben Tejada.
there really hasn't been many players from Panama.
All right, position players. This was a tough decision for me, I'm not gonna lie. I got my two guys, which again shouldn't be any surprise to people that listen to the podcast or read my prospect best guys I saw list at the end of the year, but it's gonna be either Jarred King or Champ Stewart. And in the end, I went with King. Stewart's nice and toolsy, but I lean on guys who only I have, and I think Toby might actually like Toby Hyde, of course, might like Champ Stewart more than me. And I guess there's a bunch of area scouts that like him a lot too. So I'm going with Jarred King.
Yeah, Champ got a lot of love. Although King got a lot of love too. He's a guy that people were sort of talking up as the steal of the draft.
Yeah, he's a it's
For the Mets, at least.
it's yeah it's I mean he was ranked higher at BA than he actually got drafted. He's more, I think, graded out at third round pick. They got him in the fifth round, but ended up paying him more. So I mean, I guess he's maybe should be a little better known than he is. I know Al Scarupa, who writes for Bullpen Banter, liked him a lot in the Cape. I guess technically 2 summers ago, but I just like him. Switch hitter. Got a little bit of pop, not a ton. Good athlete. He can play center. He's probably a tweener,
Yeah,
but that's
that's what I was going
kind
to
of the
say.
problem. He may end up just be Kirk Nieuwenhuis version two, but I like him enough that I think he's gonna be my guy.
I will say this, you can hang your hat on that walk rate.
He's got a very, very good approach. He's got enough fast speed that he can trigger late. I like the way he takes pitches. It's just everything there is really nice.
Which is obviously very typical of a Sandy draft pick over these last few years. He may have his holes, but you know that you're going to be able to count on that plate discipline.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably like a second division starter type, like a guy that doesn't have a traditional power profile in a corner, but does enough around it to play every day. It's like Jared King.
That's a good one. I will stay in Brooklyn. I will see your Jared King, and I will raise you a Patrick Biondi.
See, I really didn't like Biondi. I only saw him once because he was hurt, but I think for my second look, but I mean, I get it, but just I was expecting more tools, to be honest.
Yeah, his is a profile that I often find myself falling into. It's the speedy, sort of punch and Judy sort of hitter,
He's like
lefty.
the next incarnation of Darryl Siciliani, I think.
Yes, which is
Who
a
you
cool
also
comp.
loved in Brooklyn, as I recall.
I did, and he performed a lot better. Biondi
Yeah,
hit
Biondi
his
didn't
own
really
bat.
hit.
Yeah, I mean, he batted 250, but he stole a lot more bases. And I think he's faster than Siciliani, which is sort of
Probably.
what it's sort of where you're gonna, if you like Biondi, you hope that the speed is really gonna play at all levels and allow him to be a plus defender in center field at some point at the higher levels. That said, again, recent Sandy drafts, he's a guy who you like his plate discipline. He's going to walk more so than a guy like Siciliani. And so that combination of speed, solid walk rates, and a decent hit tool. Like I said, he only batted 250 in.
I just, at this point, I write off pretty much that kind of stuff for their first full, until they get into their first full professional season.
Yeah, and which is fair. I mean, you look at a guy like Matt Oberst, I think is how you say it. I think it was their fifth rounder this year, also played in Brooklyn. People were excited to see him. He was the guy who had the 30-game hit streak in college this year, and he went out to bat with like 208.
He looked completely lost against off-speed stuff. It was not a good impression for me.
That said, I don't really, I take it with a grain of salt until we see
Well,
his first
it's like
levels.
Kevin Plawecki, I think, is the perfect example. It's a guy didn't really hit in Brooklyn, and he was a catcher too, so you got to imagine he's wearing down, and then came out in Savannah the next year and absolutely mashed. And I could totally see Jarred King doing that in Savannah next year when he gets sort of the full, a real professional spring under his belt and everything else.
Well, I could totally see Patrick Beanie
Well,
doing
we'll
it.
see how it goes then, won't we? Is
Yes, we will.
there anybody else? Any other sleepers?
Oh, let's see. If we want to go back off the board, another guy that I liked from Kingsport, another name completely off the radar, not a name that I knew coming into the year, outfield switch hitting outfielder Victor Cruzado, had a.
Don't. Yeah, he was hurt when I was down there. I didn't see him.
Yeah, he missed some time this year. Not a lot, but enough that you probably missed him. But that said, sort of an interesting profile for a young Dominican outfielder. Excellent, excellent eye. He walks a ton. And you typically don't see that a lot. Good power, switch hitter. He's still pretty young. And like I said, it's a name that, certainly not on the lips of most Mets prospect watchers, Victor Cruzado. So that's a name that I'll be sort of keeping an eye on next year as a deep sleeper.
Yeah, I'll throw another Kingsport name in there too, and Pedro Perez, their third baseman. I believe the scouting term is he's bad bodied.
Big lower half.
Yes. It's
Big butt.
he's kind of fat. But we're not selling jeans here, and dude is strong. And they completely retooled his swing, and I don't know if he'll ever get out of A ball, but there's enough pop there that it's at least the power profile, because the Mets don't really have a ton of power hitters in the system, is intriguing to me. He's got enough arm for third. I don't know if he sticks there. He may be sort of the poor man's Adelin Rodriguez when all is said and done, but he stood out at least in a rather weak year for Kingsport.
So there you go. Sort of, it sort of became a sleeper list more than anything.
Yeah, because it's like our guys. And I couldn't just rave about Gabby and Noah, because otherwise the podcast would be 45 minutes longer than it's going to be.
And who wants that?
Nobody wants that.
To the next email.
To the next email. Let's see who this one is from. I have way too many windows open on my computer right now.
Close some windows.
I'm gonna have, like, I can only do too many, so many things at once. What is, if I click on the right tab too.
See, it's good. I can only do like one thing at a time, so I don't get distracted.
Is
I
from
don't have many tabs.
Chris. Hi guys, love the podcast and appreciate the insight. So would you rather have the Mets make the playoffs and exit after the first series with whatever team is concocted this year, or have the Mets bring back Jose Reyes and Beltran and barely miss the playoffs but stay in the race until the end? Thanks, keep the good work, Chris from Syracuse. So here's the thing, Rob. And I'll keep this brief. I feel like I lived through the era where the Mets had Jose Reyes and Carlos Beltran and just missed the playoffs. That happened in 2005, 2007, 2008, as I recall.
And you didn't find it utterly fulfilling?
Let's try something new. How about that? I think trading for, or well, signing Beltran, which obviously not on the table anymore, and trading for Reyes and just missing the playoffs is an outcome that's more likely than making the playoffs with the 2014 Mets as currently comprised. But I think in the end, flags, even if said flag says wild card game winner, and you know they'll hang one that says wild card game winner, they fly forever. So
that they do, although it is really tempting. And I've been known on more than one occasion, and this, I probably said it when Beltran was being traded, and I think I probably said it when Reyes was on the fence about coming back or going, that I would rather lose with my guys than win with some other random bunch of a-holes. And obviously,
life goes on. I'm losing with my dudes this year. My dudes are Josh Stanton and Henry Mejia. Let's roll.
Yeah, time for something new. I agree. And there's always somebody to latch on to. I thought I'd never get over the loss of Reyes, but turns out that I like Angel Pagan a lot. And
that worked out well.
It worked out moderately for a season or two. And now that Pagan is gone, and so on and so, there's always somebody to latch on to.
Don't get me wrong. I have a soft spot in my heart for both those players. And, I think Reyes will still be maybe he's more appealing at 3-60 after this year than he is at 4-80 right now, theoretically.
Yeah, I think so.
You just know he's going to end up on the Yankees with Beltran after next year. The Jays tank again, though.
Man, then I'll
it's going to suck so much.
I'm going to have to like root hard for the Yankees while hating them. It's going to be so conflicting.
All right, our next email is from Evan. Everyone's criticizing the signing. It's about the Grandy man is the subject. Everyone's criticizing the signing, but I love it. I've heard him on the radio with Mike, and he's a class act. Here's a couple things to think about before knocking the move. He's been an all-star more times than Ellsbury. His skill set of speed and defense will make him a more productive player as he ages. He's a million times better than the internal options. True. And better than Cruz. Better walk rate, lefty compared to righty, and better speed defense. Also true. And finally, think about this. Would he have gotten on the free agent market had he been a free agent a season earlier, coming off a 4,100-100 season? But this is all true. Are people really like criticizing the Granderson deal? I mean, there's some things that not love about it, certainly, as we talked about sort of the fourth year. But I think generally, you're right. He's a good dude. He said all the right things in his press conference this morning. I don't have a problem with Granderson.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like what we discussed earlier. You're going to, at most, it'll be a tepid criticism where, you're going to nitpick, but for the most part, he was pretty much the best available option to the Mets. They got him at a relatively reasonable deal. I think, if anything, if you are going to, encounter any vitriol, it's going to be the fact that the whole situation sort of resembles Jason Bay. Not that that's a likely scenario, but, it's just, once burned, twice shy here. Obviously, that's the fear for Mets fans, having just gone through, one of the worst contracts, I think you can say, baseball history at this point. I don't think that'll happen to
Granderson. It's not that bad. It was a bad deal. It wasn't that bad. It just wasn't long enough to be that bad.
Well, at least Mets history, it was definitely one of the worst. Probably that one, you could probably say it's the worst in Mets history. And, that said, it was sort of a very anomalous outcome. You don't expect something like that to happen again. Even if Granderson is to decline, it won't be at that precipitous level. But you can see why Mets fans are sort of gun shy when they look at a deal for 30 plus power centric outfielder with not a lot of other skills, and he gets a 4-year deal. Sounds sort of familiar.
Well, I think the deal contextually would be maybe regarded better if it came along with, signing Sin Shu Chu and signing Stephen Drew or Peralta. It's sort of a move in concert with really changing the face of the team for 2014. But more likely, Granderson's going to be the one big move, and they're going to add a Markham type signing to shore up the rotation a little bit. And maybe Cesáris Torres or Dustin Ackley, and maybe they'll trade Ike Davis for a bench piece of some sort, and it's going to be sort of Granderson or bust. And that's, I get the problems there, but that's a problem of budget, not of creative thinking, I think, and not a problem with the deal itself on its face. Sort of the same conversation we had with about Chris Young last week.
This is true. I think it's tough to really criticize the deal, especially in a vacuum. It's fine. There's really not too much wrong with it. It can certainly end up being, some cost there in terms of, money that you're not really getting back in terms of value, but that is such are the vagaries of free agency.
Yep. I think Evan does make a good point, though. It's free agency it's you're right. This is the vagaries of free agency. If Granderson had hit the market a year earlier, for whatever reason, the structure of his initial extension had been different, coming off two back-to-back 40 home run seasons, would he have been? That wasn't a super great free agent class. You basically had Hamilton and Greinke at the top of it. Is he maybe a more attractive free agent than Hamilton at that point?
Certainly more so than Michael Bourne, who the Mets are after.
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets. Let's see what he's coming off of. So he comes off back-to-back seasons where he went 40 and 100. I mean, he obviously had a big batting average hit.
I
In
mean, he struck out almost
2012,
200
he struck out a
times.
ton, yeah. But he was still a four-win player by, or three-win player by Baseball Reference. And coming off, basically it would have been, let's see, point, I can do math, 13-win player over his last three seasons. So if you think maybe it's just a tick down, I mean, is he, Hamilton was a unique free agent in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's a hard comp to make just because there's so much going on with Hamilton and
Hamilton's
different
about a year
circumstances.
younger, but I think that's an appreciable difference. He probably gets something close to Hamilton money. Maybe more years, less AAV. I think
Yeah.
probably the most likely scenario there.
And you can almost sort of think
See
right
him getting
along with Sandy.
like 6-120 something in there.
Exactly. You can just imagine Sandy thinking to himself, this is a guy who is potentially worth a lot more and get a lot more were it not for the injuries last year. And, it was sort of the fluke variety. He was hit by a pitch and broke his wrist. It's not something to expect to happen again. And, does he bounce back to be a similar hitter to 11 and 12? If so, suddenly that's a lot of surplus value that the Mets are getting.
And our last email this week is from Randy Brandt, as I promised in episode 45. I had time to rack my brain for this question, and here it is. And we conveniently have Rob on the podcast this time, and it's addressed to Jeffrey and Rob. I heard you say on the last podcast that last thing's millage was one of the first prospects you covered. That got me to thinking about what would be your starting lineup of the prospects you have covered. I'd like you to build your lineups on your first impression of the prospects, not their final results. Example, it's only two of you had high expectations of Lastings when you first saw him, unlike his current situation in Japan. Looking forward to the next podcast, Randy. So, Randy, basically, you've asked us to make a list of players we were completely wrong about. That's probably the way it's going to go for the most part.
Pretty much.
All right. Do we want to limit this to Mets prospects?
If you want to sort of stray, that's fine. I'll keep us grounded with the Mets guys.
That's good. That works for me. So we'll start at catcher. And the Mets have had awful catchers.
Yeah. No, what NA.
I mean, I guess Plawecki probably the best internal option I've seen.
Yeah, I liked Kai Gronauer way too much a couple
Wow,
years ago.
that's impressive. He's gonna, he will be a baseball lifer if he wants to be.
You mean Gronauer?
Gronauer, yeah.
I just love the fact that he was German born
He
and
speaks
lived
like four
so.
languages. They still use him as a once-a-week catcher everywhere. If he wants to coach, he'll be a baseball lifer if he wants to be.
And he told me like 5 years ago, before he was famous or before he was popular here, that David Guetta was awesome and I should start listening to him. And I was like, I'll have to remember that. Good call, David, like Kai Gronauer on that one.
I haven't seen a ton of great catchers, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm gonna like leave out Austin Hedges popping some ridiculous number at the Futures game and that kind of stuff. I guess Yasmeel Pinto in the Twins system, who's gonna be Mauer's heir apparent, who I was actually didn't like as much as the scout that was sitting next to me. I've seen this guy. We covered a lot of games together for the last couple of years, so we tend to talk whenever we're at the same game. He's like, "Ah, yeah, he's like, he's a comment. You've gotten better. Let's see how good you are. What do you think about Yasmeel Pinto?" And I'm like, I like he can hit, but I just don't know if he can he really catch every day? He's like, "I got him as an everyday regular," and of course, he immediately gets called up to the majors and rakes. So again, it's why I'm not a scout.
One of the many
One of the
reasons.
many reasons, yes. All right, first base, I think we're on a similar issue here.
Yeah. Let's see. Do we want to go Mike Jacobs?
I did like Mike Jacobs.
I didn't love him, to be honest. So I'll be true to the question. He was not one of my guys, but
I
he
did
certainly
like
was.
Mike Jacobs a little too much. Carp too.
Oh yeah, there you go. That's a guy that I liked. I liked Mike Karp. And for good reason. I mean, look at him now. He's a very useful player for the Red Sox.
Yeah, he's a platoon guy, but yeah, he's had a nice little career. Trying to think if there's anybody. He's really a
Justin
first
Huber
baseman.
went was like a catcher first
He was a
baseman.
K. Yeah, I mean, he was a catcher first. Yeah, I thought about Huber for catcher, but he's right on the border of like before my time.
Yeah, that was before I was really like covering prospects and
Yeah, I
like.
feel like they moved him. He had already moved to first base. I guess he didn't move him to first base until they traded him, so I guess he technically still would have been a catcher right around the time of the multiple trades around Chris Benson. I'll still stick with Plawecki. First base, yeah, not a ton of a Chris Parmalee. I mean, he's a major leaguer, sort of, but again, this is almost like all Mets and Rockcats, so.
Yeah, I
This
was
is
gonna say, you really like your twins.
Well, it's I see New Britain all the time. I see them for like 30 games a year. Yeah, I can't think. I'm racking my brain. All the short season first basemen are usually like fat college dudes. So that's a problem. Second base. I really liked Rhys Havens.
Yeah, true. Yeah, actually, good point. I think it'd
Anderson
be.
Hernandez too. I think he was still a shortstop when I was seeing him. Yeah, he was still a shortstop.
It would be disingenuous for me to go with anyone but Havens because, like everybody, I thought he was a can't-miss guy.
Yeah, I figured you'd have at least like a solid. He'd be like a solid everyday dude. Injuries happen. It's life.
I don't know if you have the greatest motor either. In the NBA, I guess that's what you'd call it. In baseball, that would be your want.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to tell if he's just was. Every time I saw him, it looked like he was just injured. I think it's the problem. Like, I mean, it was all like back and rib stuff too, and hip. It's just not. I guess it's probably tough to parse it out.
Yeah. I'd say he's a fair representative at second.
Yeah. All right, shortstop. I think it might be Anderson Hernandez. Really, really great shortstops I've seen.
It's going to be Tovar for me.
Really? I mean, Roman Quinn, who's not going to be a shortstop, I guess he got hurt too, isn't going to be a
It's
shortstop
possible.
at the major league level, but.
Yeah, didn't he? It was his Achilles.
He was
It
like, kill
was.
it was something bad, where it's like,
Yeah,
oh,
for a
that's not
speed guy,
good.
for a guy who makes his game entirely on speed, that's not good.
He is quick, though. Man, that dude is fast. They're shortstops.
Well, I don't think either of us covered Reyes, but obviously he was fun to as
Yeah.
a fan.
He's Anderson Hernandez. I said stupid things about Anderson Hernandez. I really said stupid things about Anderson Hernandez. Good Lord.
I mean, he had like a web gem in him every like month or
Oh, he
so
could
that would.
pick it. I just could never hit.
whatsoever. And he was surprisingly not sure-handed on a day-to-day basis. I mean, he'd make like the bonehead play every now and then. You're like, still, really? For
I
a
mean, he's
guy
still
who
kicking around. I guarantee you he was in AAA somewhere last year.
Well, I'm sure he's anchoring a winter league lineup right now.
Let's see. Anderson Hernandez, who I once said, for the record, if I had known about this guy, I would have been more amenable to the Reyes for Soriano rumors. Yeah, he's on Tigres de la C in Venezuela.
Ooh. How about
Oh,
Arjaines
sorry.
Reyes?
Lise is Dominican, not really hitting. We actually played in the Mexican League this year. It was in a, I guess that's technically affiliated mall still,
Yeah, sort
but
of AAA, but not really.
yeah. Yeah, I mean he hit, but everyone hits in the Mexican League. Yeah, his last he was in Oklahoma City, which I think was still an Astros affiliate in 2011. He had 300. Just kind of surprised he didn't. You would think he would catch on somewhere. He's my age, which is, yeah, it's kind of life, isn't
Guess that explains it.
it? Arjaines Reyes, you wanted me to look up. All right, we're stretching the length of this podcast so I can look up Arjaines Reyes, who I also liked, not as much as Ruben Gauthier though.
Yeah, not a match prospect, but definitely.
I was a Ruben Gauthier guy. It's
Yeah.
funny because I found my writing sample when I applied. And Ruben Gauthier, or sorry, Arjaines Reyes has not played in affiliated ball since 2011. I found my writing sample for my Mets Geek application from 2007, where I sung the praises of Ruben Gauthier, I think. And they just needed to find him a platoon partner. That didn't work out so well. I can't believe Alex rejected my application. Third base. There really hasn't been anybody.
Yeah, I mean, since Wright, it's sort of been a black hole. Now, Jeff Kepinger played second.
Yeah, Kep was a second baseman, who I probably should have
Yeah.
included at second base because God, I love Jeff Kepinger.
Yeah, again, it was a little early for me to be watching him on a prospect level, but yeah, it's sort of hard. Just like at the major league level, there's really nobody else relevant because of Wright.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of third baseman I've actually watched now. Let's see.
Well, you probably watched Samara Campbell in your time.
I saw a lot of Eric Campbell. He was more of a. Yeah, I guess I did see him at third, though. He had that terrible year at Binghamton before they
Yeah.
moved him to like to be more of a four corners guy. Let's see who else. Brooklyn's always just had awful third basemen. Like total, not like not even org guy third baseman.
Not a big Richard Lucas fan, huh?
Apparently, he's like the nicest guy, great clubhouse guy, great teammate. He's an org guy. I'll qualify him as an org guy. He's not a full on NP. I've seen a lot of Richard Lucas. Josh Rodriguez was playing a lot of third for Binghamton this year. He's like again like my age, which is a problem. He's actually a couple years younger, but still.
And there's our Rule 5 tie back. He was a former overall number one pick in the Rule 5 draft.
You can hang your hat on that.
And now he's playing for
If I go
Binghamton.
outside of the Mets system, it's easy. It's Miguel Sano.
Yeah, going back to
I'm
Rock.
really upset that he might have to get Tommy John surgery. Because I was like Sano, Buxton, Alex Meyer. I was going to be spending a lot of time in New Britain, especially now that I live 10 minutes from there.
Yeah,
Miguel
the
Sano.
Twins, they're building a nice little farm
Again,
system
nice little
over.
farm. I'll still go to see Byron Buxton, don't get me wrong. Let's do the outfield. Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gomez.
Yeah, I'm
Moving
allowed to say that one.
on. Moving on.
Fun to cover.
Another great tidbit from my Mets Geek writing sample. Was like I comped Carlos Gomez to Carl Crawford.
Hey.
It kind of worked out in the
Yeah,
end, sort of, maybe.
that one makes you live in posterity.
Yeah, right here, man. Prospect Maven. Other outfielders I've seen that I liked. I really like Cesar Pueyo. I don't know that he's going to be a really above average major leaguer, but there's just something about him. Can't put my finger on it. It might be the hair.
It sounds like it might be.
It could very well be the hair. I did like Milledge. I liked F. Mart. certainly. Very,
Yeah,
very
I
pretty
like
swing.
Nemo. Yeah.
I like Nimmo more than most, I think, as we've discussed on the podcast.
You do. You definitely like him more than I do.
Yeah.
Here's one reaching back. How about Alex Escobar?
I
I
was
thought he was doing
never,
something.
yeah. I think he came up when we discussed like the best prospects in Mets history, and it was pretty freaking impressive.
And I guess that's what happens when you break your back.
Yeah, this is what happens, yes. Any other big outfielders that I've seen recently? Well, no, because the Mets have no outfield prospects, now that I'm thinking about
Yeah, for like 10 years, I had
it.
Fernando Martinez.
Yes. All right, pitching. Well, I guess we'll start with starters. I really liked Brian Bannister. Should not be a surprise. Yusmeiro Petit. Should not be a surprise.
I thought Brad Holt was gonna. I mean, when you saw him in Brooklyn and you just watched him like dealing and just striking everyone out.
I talked myself into Brad Holt, like post-shoulder issues, which is probably one of my larger demerits.
Yeah, I mean, I tried defending him, but at that point it was clear. In watching him, it was just the same Brad Holt.
I mean, I've heard like the whole story now, and it's complicated, but yeah, I definitely was probably too high on Holt. Let's see who else for starters. Oh, Petit. I mean, Zach Wheeler, I guess. You kind of see. I watched Zach Wheeler in like freezing cold weather in April, hitting 98 on the gun, and like, oh, yeah, he's gonna be pretty good.
How about, let's say, Dale Esguerra?
You know, I thought he was gonna be like the hidden gem of the Santana trade.
As did I.
I thought he would be the best guy in that group. Other than Gomez, I thought he'd be the best. I thought he'd be better than Mulvey or Humber.
Yeah. Well, that didn't work out.
No, he had like a serious health issue a couple years ago, didn't he? An aneurysm or something like that.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that. Once he left
Yeah,
the system, I lost touch with him.
he had some. I caught him. He was actually.
In New Britain, I'm guessing.
No, Rod, I caught him on MILB TV. Like he was randomly starting in a Rochester Buffalo game a couple years ago. And still not, never actually. He's one of those projectable guys that never actually projected.
No, I mean, he had a great changeup and a big body and could barely hit 89.
Yeah, everyone thought, like, oh, he'll be throwing 90. He had, like, weird random velocity fluctuations, too. I feel like, yeah, he's sitting, like, 87 to 93 in this start. Yeah, one of those things.
How about staying in that trade, Phil Humber?
I was never a Humber guy. I would like Rice pitchers scared the crap out of me even then.
So I agree. I was on that same boat of anti-Rice pitchers. Although I will say, for a guy, I don't know that it's happened that a guy has left the majors as quickly as he did after throwing a perfect game.
Well, I mean, he always had, I think he had arm issues after that too. Yeah, Garrett had a blood clot in his right shoulder, the same thing G had. I think it was more serious, though. But he's still in the Twins system. He pitched in their, I assume, just rehabbing in their Gulf Coast League affiliate.
Yeah, he's still messing around down in winter ball right now. I think he's actually doing okay.
Yeah, Dale's career. That covers the starters. Any big arm relievers you liked? Were you, I talked about this with Alex. You were the, what's his name? Oh, God.
Nick Carr.
Nick Carr, yes, you were the Nick Carr guy.
I
I like
just
how you were able to fill that in like without even missing a beat.
felt that coming. That's how much I liked him.
You did like Nick Carr a lot. You liked Edgin too, but I think you liked Nick Carr more.
Yeah, I like Dejan. I like Nick Carr a lot. I was always surprised that Nick Carr didn't catch on somewhere because the Mets finally got sick of his whole, just like many of the names we've discussed, sort of the Rule 5 draft profile, throw it really hard and really don't know where it's going. And, you figure that it's not going to really work, but I assumed he'd catch on, and he never really did. After the Mets cut him, he fell out of baseball.
I like Jeff Walters, as we all know. Sounds like sorry, was it Ruben today was saying on Twitter he might get a shot out of the pen opening day, which is fine by me.
Yeah, we're going to definitely see a decent amount of Walters this year. I'm looking forward to that.
Think other guys I've seen over the years out of the pen that I've liked.
I know it's not Gonzalez or Man.
Now, I actually, for all the crap I've given Gonzalez Hermann on this podcast, I liked him as like a deep, deep sleeper for many, many years.
Now, that was back when he was starting. Did you see him as a future reliever?
Yeah, I mean, I think even then. I didn't, until you see him, like, actually on video, you don't just don't realize how straight that fastball is and how good a look he gives guys at it. But he was a guy, just the slider just never got there. The changeup's a really good pitch. Like, it, you can make an argument it's right now the best. I know that's not shouldn't say that. Dylan Cease is better. But it's one of the better changeups in the organization.
I think I've tried to make that argument. And this season, at least in terms of the value that it created, and that's not necessarily the best,
Right.
hard and fast rule, but it was up there with G, and you could argue for that one over G's, but definitely the
He's been
pick.
able to throw it right on right a lot more effectively than I thought. I guess I'll say that. I was just annoyed they added him to the rule. They protected him for last year's Rule 5 draft over Jeffrey Marte. So why are you listening to me, really? I should have done Jeffrey Marte at third base.
Oh, there you
I completely
go.
forgot
How did you
about that.
forget?
Out of sight, out of mind.
You know who I liked, and he just absolutely fell off the face of the planet a couple years ago. In Binghamton, it was Manny Alvarez.
I remember the name, and I think I've seen him pitch. I know
He
I've seen
was
him pitch, but
sort of like the meatball build, like the short, stout,
they had a they I feel like they had
like.
a million of those guys between like 2008 and two, like Anderson Garcia was like that too, I think.
Yeah. Alvarez was, I mean, it was frustrating because he put up a mid-2s ERA in Binghamton that year. He struck everybody out and he had great control. Look at this. 47 innings, 57 strikeouts, 6 walks.
That's
And I
nice.
was like, okay, I know this stuff isn't going to train. He's not going to do this even in AAA, which he somewhat did. I mean, he moved on to AAA and had some success, but he just didn't have enough innings because he got hurt. After the injury, never pitched again.
I
That was
thought
it.
Elvin Ramirez would be better than he ended up.
Yeah, that didn't work out for the Angels so well.
I feel like I like Henry Mejia as a major league pitcher better than I liked him as a prospect. I was considering Mejia for starters, but I never loved him as a prospect.
Really? Oh, wow. No, I was huge on him, and now I'm like slowly getting back onto the
Short
bandwagon.
righty, no breaking ball. Not a good profile.
Yeah, but he flashed the curve, and
I guess, but
there were days that I saw it where I was like, oh, he'll figure it out. He'll harness that beast. Never really did. He's still working on it, but there's enough other stuff going on.
yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. That's the emails for this week. As always, you email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. Rob, I think we're in the clear. Robert Brender from our from the Jets podcast, guess where the Sharks podcast, says it doesn't look like there's going to be anything going down in the lobby at our meetings. So I guess that we can sign off safely for now.
But have you heard from Chris Cotillo, though?
I saw him. Let's see, Chris Cotillo. He was tweeting out that everyone's being really nice to him. Actually, he tweeted out earlier that every time he ordered a Sprite, they were putting more and more ice in the glass. And I'm like, dude, you're not going to be their favorite customer this week. You got 500 like baseball dudes all drinking like crazy, and you're ordering Sprite.
If you're not familiar with the name, he's the he writes for MLB Daily Dish, another SB Nation site, and he's very young
He's in high school.
and does a great job. He's broken a number of stories this hot stove season.
He broke the Pfister trade and at least one other one other big deal, I think, too.
He's down there in Orlando
Drinking
making
Sprite in the
boots.
lobby. Taking really awkward pictures with Jeff Passan.
To be living that life.
That is the dream right there. It's better than I'm better Orlando than here. It's I was scraping ice off my car when I left work today.
Yeah,
Now that I
I'm
am
with you
once
on
again
that
a
one.
full-time Connecticut resident. I guess it was even worse in the city.
It sucks to live in the Northeast sometimes.
Kind of does. So I guess the one other thing of note, I tried putting a fan post out on this. I want to do a Mason Avenue audio meetup somewhere in Connecticut now that we're both in Connecticut.
Ooh, so not just an AA meetup like we've held a couple times in the past, but an
Yeah,
AA
Steve's doing
meetup.
something in January again, I think the Amazing Avenue regional gathering here, which I'll try to get down for if I can, or the ARG, if you will. I've been toying with the idea of like a live podcast recording if I can set it up. I think I have the equipment for it at this point.
Ooh, interesting proposal.
Somebody suggested actually doing it at the Two Roads Brewery in Stratford, which is more down your neck of the woods.
Is it? Where's
Relatively
that's
speaking,
Stratford? Yes,
yeah.
okay. So near, like near Bridgeport. Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. I'll start. So if you are from or live in currently in Connecticut and listen to the podcast, I know there's a few of you out there, probably more. Send us a note either to me or to the podcast email address if you'd be interested in such a thing sometime this winter. Or respond to my fan post, which I'm sure is probably still there on Amazon Avenue. That's all I got for this week, Rob. Hopefully, things might change. Who knows? It's a fluid situation.
Yeah, well, just hit the end record button, and I'm sure Sandy will announce some sort of signing.
That's how it's going to go. So, episode 47, it's coming at some point. We'll see you then.